It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Training camps 2 weeks away around the NFL. We're going to be talking about preseason games before you know it. We got to start to get Evan position by position tiered breakdown, which is my favorite podcast of the year and get the most downloads, by the way. Everybody is curious about Tears of Evan. Anyway, I'm Ross Tucker. My third year of fantasy football, kind of like quarterbacks, I really think this will be the year that I flourish. You know, first year was a little rough. Second year, I was middling. This year is when I really take off. I've been in the system now for 3 years. I've been listening to Evan Silva of RotoWorld.com just spew nonsense now for 3 years and bring on his cronies. So I am very, very, very excited for fantasy football this year, including the MFL 10 League that we're going to be drafting very, very soon, really just a couple weeks away. And we still have a bunch of spots. I'll talk more about this later, but all you need to do is give us an iTunes comment and any sponsor confirmation or sign up for Tuckheads, really anything else, Amazon, PayPal, anything else, and you're pretty much going to be in the league. Speaking of that, Johnny Rumford, Evan, is back. Camp. He won his free $100 last year. You get the free $10 to enter, and then he won the league, so we got $100 for nothing. He sent me his sponsor confirmation and the iTunes comments where he made fun of me in his iTunes rating. But that's okay, Johnny. You're in, dude. You are in. So very, very fired up for this league. Very fired up for fantasy football season, which I feel like is basically here. Evan, we do need to address one thing here right at the top. I actually got the guest today, which is great. Mike Taglieri from Pro Football Focus. Although he's one of your buddies because you guys are all like thick as thieves in the fantasy industry. But the Brady suspension came down today, or at least the appeal was denied. My point would be pump the brakes on doing anything right now, because you see people talking about he's going to go to the Supreme Court. It's a Hail Mary. You know, he's got no shot, blah, blah, blah. I also talked to a legal expert that said, based on the timeline, you know, he will file it with the Supreme Court right before the season. He'll get a stay until they actually hear it, which could actually, believe it or not, be in January. So the legal expert, Alan Fang, that I spoke to already today, Evan, seems to think Brady's playing this year. Brady's playing the first four games. So who knows what legal experts to trust at this point, which is why I'm kind of saying pump the brakes a little bit and don't take this as being fact that Jimmy G is in for Brady the first four games.
Yeah, well, you talk to legal experts, you talk to Andrew Brand. I mean, I would take your – you went to Princeton. You know, I would take your opinion over anybody else just, you know, out there spewing stuff on Twitter. It was 7 days before week one last year that Brady's four-game suspension was postponed or expunged or however you want to say it, 7 days before week one. So be prepared for a last-minute thing. Everything in this league happens at the last minute.
Exactly correct. Let's roll.
Big Eater of the Week.
Well, as promised, we are very excited to be joined by Mike Taglieri, who is the lead writer for the fantasy folks over at Pro Football Focus, which everybody knows about Pro Football Focus these days. He's also the co-host of the Hot Route Pod. Is that right, Mike?
Yes, sir. You got it. The Hot Route Podcast for Lights Out Fantasy Football.
The Hot Route Podcast for Lights Out Fantasy Football. And you can follow him on Twitter at Mike Taglieri NFL, and that's Taglieri. Mike, the way we usually do it is I typically ask a couple questions that I'm specifically interested in terms of background, and then Evan usually has a whole stack of questions for you. So I guess just looking, Mike, for your background and how you ended up at Pro Football Focus writing fantasy for them.
Yeah, well, actually, I started my own website. It was back in 2011. I started writing on my own website, and after kind of catching on there, just like a little blog I put together that my wife kind of pushed me into to say that I should get my words out there. And after doing that for about a year, Fantasy Pros invited me to take part in the accuracy ranking competition, and I had multiple top six finishes. So Pro Football Focus announced they were hiring for a writer. It was a part-time position at the time, and I applied and I got into it. So, I mean, I was fortunate enough to land. It was a few years that I was running my own site before I kind of got in with them, but it's been a long journey, but it's a fun one, and I'm happy to be here now.
So then my other question, Mike, revolves around Pro Football Focus and you working for them and the data and the analysis that they do. What makes you or someone that writes fantasy stuff for Pro Football Focus different? Do you have a different slant to it? Do you feel like maybe you just have easier access to more information? Talk about a little bit what it's like to be the fantasy writer specifically for Pro Football Focus, PFF.
Well, yeah, the access to the stats that we have access to, it's out of control. Evan knows. I know Evan has access to some of those as well, because some of the media outlets do have access. But the signature stats that our staff comes up with, because these guys are the ones that sit down and watch every single snap and chart every single play and the grades and things like that. Obviously, you know, there have been some heat over that over the past few years. But the truth of the matter is, when you're getting down to the nitty gritty and you watch every single play like they do, you get to know what looks like a good play, what doesn't look like a good play. And did a quarterback specifically make that play better, or was he pretty much average on that? Even though on a stat sheet it might show up as 60 yards and a touchdown, maybe the wide receiver did something to make that quarterback look better. So we have access to basically every play from every single game, like right down to, you know, the final kneel down for the quarterback. Everything football does behind the scenes is pretty unique, and to have access to that is definitely something that I know a lot of people envy in the industry.
Evan, what do you got?
Mike, it's great to have you on, man. I've had the privilege of meeting Mike a couple times in real life. Cool dude. So great to have you on the feast, man.
I'm happy to be on with you, Evan. You know, whenever you and I get together, we just talk football anyway. So it's just like, I just kind of picture us at like a dinner table right now and just having a few drinks and talking some football.
Awesome. So you came out with an article. So everybody's talking about go wide receiver early in drafts this year, but you came out with an article about a zero wide receiver strategy. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, because I'm always looking for a reason not to follow the trend. So I don't know how far back that goes in my life, but basically I seen everybody wanting to go wide receiver heavy, because even going to look back at 2013 data, there was one wide receiver taken in the first 15 picks. It was Kelvin Johnson. That was it. And then you had like a Dez Bryant the next round. And nowadays you have 6, 7, 8, sometimes 9 receivers going in the first round. So I was just like, what's the difference here? Like, why is everybody feel the need to go so wide receiver heavy? Because there's only so many running backs out there that actually are guaranteed that 275 touch mark. So what I did is I set out to research it and say, okay, I'm going to settle this for myself. So I went into the research, like finding out if you're looking at a top 24 running back who is drafted or a top 24 wide receiver, I want to know who busts more. I want to know who has more RB1, wide receiver one performances. Everybody says that those top end wide receivers, those guys are guaranteed to get the targets and, you know, they're the more consistent player. Well, that's not true. Not even in 2015, which you can arguably say was the year to go zero running back, because of how many injuries there were and all the busts there were at the top of the draft. But even going through the data, wide receivers were just as bad. I went through and looked at the bust rates for RB1 through RB24, and the same for wide receivers. Running backs actually bust 5% less by taking them with a top 24 pick rather than a wide receiver. And then vice versa, on the 25 to 50 range. So if you're take running backs early and you go wide receivers later, it actually works out better for you in that front too. So there literally is no downside to taking running back early. I know you and I have talked, Evan, about there's only so many workhorse running backs in the NFL. So if you start your draft by taking two, maybe even three of them, you can get like a Le'Veon Bell, Devonder Mar Miller, and then even maybe LeSean McCoy or Carlos Hyde in the third or fourth round. All of a sudden you have three of these, you know, 8 to 10 guys who are guaranteed 275 touches. Whereas wide receiver, I'm not going to sit here and say, I'm not locking myself into any strategy, but I want one of those top 12 wide receivers. That's it. I don't want to be stuck with Jarvis Landry as my wide receiver one, but I also don't find it necessary to take, you know, three wide receivers with my first three picks, because then you're going to be sitting there with somebody like Jay Ajayi, who has no job security, as your RB1. I'm not comfortable with that. I know the zero running back strategy has kind of, it's taken the whole fantasy world by storm over the last couple of years, but here's my issue with it. You are relying on an injury for your guy to actually make it into the starting lineup. You're also, and if you're talking about a guy that you're going to grab off the waiver wire draft, the waiver wire, you are fighting with 11 other people that know exactly who that guy is. You know, unless it's like a Spencer Ware, Charcandrick West scenario. A unique piece of data that I found, Evan. So basically what I did last year to average an RB1 performance, which is top 12, it required 14.1 standard fantasy points. There were 13 running backs who scored that amount in five or more games. 11 of them were drafted in the top 30 at their position. So therefore, all you're looking at is D'Angelo Williams and Devonta Freeman, who were actually every week starters teams, whereas everything else you're kind of piecing together, and the odds are not stacked in your favor by building your team off the waiver wire.
I really think it's just a reminder that there are a lot of different ways to win in fantasy football, and there's not one strategy that we all need to follow. And that's why I think it's good to discuss different strategies. I mean, in MFL 10s last year, you know, we've had Christo come on the show. He was the winningest high-volume player in MFL 10s last year, and he was going running back early. And, I mean, he had good fortune with players that he got a lot of, like Delanie Walker and Jordan Reed later in drafts. And, I mean, that's really what you need to win, especially in that format. But it's just that there's a lot of different ways to be good at fantasy and to have a good draft. Mike, I know you've been looking at Duke Johnson a lot recently. He's been a guy who's generating a lot of buzz. What are your thoughts on him for the 2016 season?
Well, my first thought is that his ADP was criminally low. I know I looked at it a couple weeks ago, and I made it my point to go out there and change his ADP because he was being drafted, I think it was the number 36 running back on Fantasy Football Calculator. And that was in standard. It was like, he was like 33 in PPR leagues. So I went out and looked, like, so I wanted to create an article that did it. And so what I did is I actually compared Duke Johnson to Ryan Matthews. And I said that Duke Johnson's actually the guy I would take over Ryan Matthews, especially considered their ADP, because you can get Duke Johnson two rounds later. And Ryan Matthews is, well, he's Ryan Matthews. But Duke Johnson, obviously with Hugh Jackson coming to Cleveland, it's changing the whole scenery out there. But the way you have to kind of look at it is Isaiah Crowell is Jeremy Hill. Duke Johnson is Gio Bernard. The problem is that Isaiah Crowell isn't very good. He wasn't good last year. He's been very hit or miss in the pros. I know Hugh Jackson has already said that he's got some work to do. And that's on top of all this Instagram stuff that kind of happened recently where he might be facing possible suspension. But Duke Johnson, the part where you got to love this kid is because, you know, coming from Miami, he was obviously fantastic there, but you're looking at a Hugh Jackson offense. Over the last four coach teams that Hugh Jackson's had, whether it be the Raiders or the Bengals, they have ranked top seven in running back carries and top five in rushing touchdowns. So when you add that up, even if you're projecting Duke Johnson for just, you know, 160, 170 carries, he's going to have that floor of 60 to 70 receptions, raising his floor. I don't see that any way that Duke Johnson finishes outside of the top 24 running backs in standard. And it wouldn't surprise me if he snuck inside the top 15 in PPR leagues.
You've talked a lot about Carlos Hyde, and you seem to be one of the analysts who is maybe a little bit more optimistic about him than other analysts. Like, I look at it, Mike, and, you know, I think the 49ers are going to be awful. Their offensive line doesn't look good. You know, they're leaning on Zane Beatles, who was cut by the Jaguars, a rookie right guard who I know was an early draft pick, but, you know, definitely not guaranteed to have success. A center and Daniel Kilgore, who is always injured, you know, a right tackle and Eric Pierce, who's horrible. They have the lowest Vegas win total in the NFC. Their quarterback is probably not going to be good. You know, just a lot of factors that I don't think add up well for a running back. And I know you're also definitely high on Torrey Smith. So why don't you just talk about the 49ers offense and how you see it playing out this year and hit on a couple dudes.
Well, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that obviously that you want to talk about when you talk about the 49ers is you want to talk about Chip Kelly coming there. When Chip Kelly comes to your team, you need to look at the volume. So when I'm talking about Carlos Hyde or Torrey Smith, and I want everyone to know that when I talk highly of these guys, I'm talking about them because of the volume. We're going from a team that had the 29th most plays per game last year, going to Chip Kelly's team that runs about 70 plays per game. Blaine Gabbert, obviously, you know, towards the second half of last year, I don't think he was as bad as people want to make him out to be. I think he took a step forward. And then Torrey Smith, he averaged the fifth most fantasy points per target last year, and that was with Colin Kaepernick and Blaine Gabbert throwing him the ball. The issue was that he didn't see nearly enough targets. With Anquan Boldin leaving via free agency, and I honestly don't know where Anquan Boldin's going to end up. I'm surprised he doesn't have a job right now, but him leaving clears up a lot of targets. Chip Kelly, his perimeter wide receivers, they average, I want to say it was 229 targets per year in his offense. And that's including with Jordan Matthews as the primary target last year. So going and looking at the perimeter wide receivers, unless you think Quentin Patton is going to see 100-plus targets, it's hard to envision Torrey Smith with anything less than 120. So when you look at the 120 target mark, and again, we're talking about volume, 120 mark, there was one wide receiver last year who saw that many targets and did not finish in the top 30 wide receivers. That was Golden Tate. Golden Tate had an average depth of target of 5.8 yards. Torrey Smith is not going to see that. Torrey Smith's a perimeter wide receiver who has played in the slot in over 10% just once in his career. He finished as a top 23 wide receiver in each of the 4 years of his career in Baltimore. Like I said, Torrey Smith, it revolves around volume. I'm playing with numbers here, and if he's healthy, he's going to see those targets. He's going to be there. And as for Carlos Hyde, the reason I like Hyde more than most is because I think people are underestimating how much he's going to need to be used in the passing game. You said it. This team is not very good. Their defense is not very good. It's going to take time to turn this whole regime around. But Carlos Hyde is going to be locked in for 20 touches a game. And you're not going to pull him off the field like, oh, it's third down. We're going to pull Carlos Hyde off the field. Because a lot of times they're going to have to be in hurry-up offense, especially in the second half of games, where if we're playing numbers, I went through and I looked at Chip Kelly's running backs, every single one of them. And if you play the numbers with the volume that Carlos Hyde's going to get, that's all you're looking for. You're not even looking for something special, which – there's a lot of people out there. I know Mike Clay, he's a huge Carlos Hyde fan of his talent. Me personally, all I'm looking for is the volume. And if he is average with that volume, he is by his default an RB2. So therefore, and if you add in some receptions like I believe he will, like I don't think there's a running back on the roster that I'm scared of to take snaps away from him. Sean Drone, he's just a journeyman in the NFL. And I just don't believe that he's actually going to take Carlos Hyde off the field. Carlos Hyde played in a similar offense, I know, in college. I'm more excited to see Carlos Hyde. It's just a matter of, can his foot withstand? Is he healthy? But anything when we talk about the 49ers, we're talking about volume, and that's the reason to love them. And on top of that, where they're being drafted right now, it's just not showing that volume. So you don't have to love the player. You just have to love the volume.
I got to ask everybody that comes on the show, about Ezekiel Elliott, where do you have him ranked in standard leagues and PPR? And, you know, kind of tell me the story of how you got to those rankings.
Ezekiel Elliott, when he was actually, when the Cowboys were on the clock and they took him, it was just like one of those things where it was like that knee-jerk reaction to say, really? Did you just do that? Like, I was trying to project if he would go to the Bears, you know, where they were drafting, the Dolphins. And then when he went to the Cowboys, it was just like so many thoughts went through my mind. And one was, okay, they talk so highly of Darren McFadden, and, you know, McFadden's that three down back, even though he's not great. They signed Alfred Morris, who's that, you know, that bruiser that seemingly needs a workhorse role to be effective. You have Lance Dunbar, who's going to be coming back, who was playing well before his injury last year. And then we're adding Ezekiel Elliott to this. So you don't spend that high a draft pick unless you're going to use the guy. So he's obviously going to be the workhorse in this running back, in this offense. The problem is trying to figure out who is going to spell him, how many touches a game they're going to get, and how you keep this kid off the field. When you're looking at a team that has such a small window with Tony Romo, obviously Romo has been injured way too often, and I'm hoping he can stay healthy. But Ezekiel Elliott, so I kind of broke down the projections, and I was like, okay, where am I going to put this? I honestly think that there's a chance that either Darren McFadden or Alfred Morris gets cut. I don't know which one it would be, because I can't see them carrying them plus Dunbar on the roster, because then you're trying to divvy up too many carries, too many touches to too many different running backs when you're talking about Ezekiel Elliott as a three-down back. So I went in and kind of envision Alfred Morris as that goal line short yardage back. Darren McFadden is strictly a handcuff at this point, and I can't see him getting any more than five touches per game. So when you look at Elliott, and I can see why analysts want to love him. I know that you're high on him, Evan. I have him right now at 288 carries and about 37 to 40 receptions. And that put him right at number five in my projections, right behind Gurley and Adrian Peterson. And that's in standard leagues. So in PPR, I'll bump him up a little bit. I'd take him over Peterson there. But you're talking about a guy that we haven't seen much on the field. We haven't seen him on the field at all yet. So for those who are advocating to take David Johnson over Ezekiel Elliott, I'm not going to argue with them at all, because I honestly might do the same thing. My projections have Ezekiel Elliott just a spot higher, but like I said, they're both solid picks, because you're, again, these running backs, these are two of the eight to 10 running backs that are going to be guaranteed that 275 touch mark. The part that concerned me with Elliott, I know, Evan, you, I can't remember the number, but it was something on Bodog or something like that. One of the betting sites where you can bet on the amount of yards, was it, that Ezekiel Elliott would have this year?
It was Bovada, which has him at 900 rushing yards. But Bovada is not Vegas. I know a lot of people don't know that, but that's like an offshore sort of deal. But yeah, go ahead.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that makes, and that I heard that number and I was like, that can't be right, can it? Because obviously I have him down for 1,300 yards, but another little worry for Ezekiel Elliott of not eclipsing those Todd Gurley's, those Le'Veon Bell's and things like that, his touchdown total. I have him projected at 7 rushing touchdowns this year. Obviously, DeMarco Murray, if you went back before his breakout season in 2014, DeMarco Murray had a little bit of issues scoring at the goal line, just because Dez Bryant is a monster there, and that's not going away. Ezekiel Elliott, he's not going to change that. And then you look at Alfred Morris, like I talked about, in the short yardage role, that goal line work. So I think the upside is capped on Ezekiel Elliott, considering how many running backs are on the roster with him, especially if they don't cut one. But I have no issue taking him as a volume RB1 in a great, great offense with a great offensive line. That offensive line is fantastic, and that's part of the reason that you kind of have him there.
So I think that would be maybe one of the best arguments against him that we've heard, is that he's not, you know, that there might be some concerns about his touchdown scoring ceiling. I mean, the Cowboys are going to be a low volume offense, number one. Dez Bryant is a touchdown scoring machine, you know, maybe the best red zone receiver that, you know, of his generation. And then Alfred Morris could be a threat down near the goal. So that is, that might be the best argument against him that we've heard, other than just he's a rookie. So one last question, Ross. What are your thoughts this year, Mike, on the Titans running backs? Because this is another team that I think most people anticipate to be not that good. I mean, their Vegas win total certainly is low.
A lot of people don't have faith in their coach, you know, in their coaching staff. I think they might be a team with the arrow pointing up, but I don't know if they're going to be that good this year. What is your take on the Titans, and how do we evaluate these running backs? How do we sort through these RBs?
This was the craziest part about, like, projecting the Titans, because, like, when you brought in DeMarco Murray and you trade for this guy that caused a whole bunch of, like, of problems in Philadelphia, saying, I want out, and it's kind of like that whole prima donna thing. He caused issues because he didn't get the ball. Like, he wanted to be the guy, like he was in Dallas. So to see him traded out to Tennessee, I'm like, okay, they're going to use him. He'll be a volume running back, like those running backs we talk about. He's in that next tier, that those RB2s that aren't volume. And you know he's got RB1 upside. We've seen it before. But then they go and they draft Derrick Henry. Now, I'm not going to overreact with the Derrick Henry draft pick just because I believe Derrick Henry is raw. I think he's a great runner. I think he's going to be an in-between the tackles guy for them. I think he's going to be on the wrong side of a 60-40, maybe 70-30 timeshare. I don't think you go out and trade for DeMarco Murray like they did and not use him. Derrick Henry is not going anywhere. He's very, very young. His receiving chops, I'm not going to sit here and say he can't catch the ball out of the backfield, but he didn't do it much in college. DeMarco Murray is that three down back. So I don't think Derrick Henry is well-rounded enough to take over DeMarco Murray's job. There's so much going around, and a lot of people are saying they might even take Derrick Henry over DeMarco Murray in a redraft mode, which is just crazy to me. I don't see that at all. I actually think Derrick Henry is more of like that to maybe 10 touch running back. And DeMarco Murray is more of the 18 to 20 touch on any given week. Now, as you said, Tennessee's offense is pointing in the right direction. Their passing attack is going to be much better. I think Marcus Mariota offers a dimension to that offense that they didn't have with Zach Mettenberger. But DeMarco Murray, he should be able to stay on the field a lot more just because he's better in the passing game than is Derrick Henry. Future-wise, of course, Henry's the guy to be there, but I don't trade for a guy unless I'm going to use him. They've reassured DeMarco Murray that he's going to be the guy, and Derrick Henry's going to be a complimentary, and I truly believe that. I think that every year we tend to overrate rookies, and especially those that are in like a timeshare like this, whereas Ezekiel Elliott, there's no question that he's the guy there. The capital they spent on the draft pick was there. Derrick Henry, he wasn't drafted nearly as high as Ezekiel Elliott, and that's for good reason. The NFL is going towards a timeshare in all backfields, and this is just another one, but DeMarco Murray is on the right side of that, and they're going to use him up in the last legs of his career. DeMarco Murray is a bottom-end RB2 who's got some upside and good matchups.
Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Mike Taglieri, NFL, TagLiere. He also is a co-host of the Hot Route Pod at LightsOutFantasyFootball.com. Mike, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
No, thanks for having me on, guys. You have a good weekend.
Well, you guys were mentioning, Evan, you know, some of the offshore bet places where you can place wagers. Of course, our go-to place is BetDSI.com, primarily because they give all of us $10 free to bet, wager on whatever we want, whether it's politics, baseball, or just lock in your 10 free bucks for the football season now. Using the code TUCKER10, or even using the code DRAFT10 if you want. That's the key, is to make sure when you go there, sign up. It's really easy to sign up. It looks great on your phone. It's online sports betting, as good as you can get anywhere else. In fact, they get a great rating by all the pieces and places out there that rate these things. But make sure you use the code TUCKER10 or DRAFT10 for the free $10. That is the key.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
Email address, ross@rostucker.com. Evan, we mentioned earlier that we still have several open spots for the MFL 10 League, and basically we're giving you another free $10 because you don't have to pay an entry fee, but you still might win the $100. So we're giving you that, number one. And number two, it's really easy to do it. I mean, we're going to have a bunch of entries next week. All you need to do is send us any sponsor confirmation and give us an iTunes ranking like Chris Headgate did, Evan. He said, "Hey, Ross, longtime listener from Sweden here. Subscribe to all of your podcasts. See attached screenshot." He also signed up and sent a pretty cool BetDSI confirmation. So good timing with that, Chris. I gave a very honest 5-star reviews on iTunes for the mighty RTFP and the Fantasy Feast, and I'm forwarding this confirmation to formally apply for the Fantasy Feast MFL 10 League. Hey, guess what, Chris? You didn't just apply. You're in, dude. You are in, along with Johnny Rumford and Mike Ivanich last week. He said, in addition to hoping for a place in the MFL 10 League, he had a question for us, Evan, about quarterback whisperer coaches. We often hear from the media how some coaches have a history of getting great quarterback play from quarterbacks that may not be elite, such as Bill O'Brien. He understands a quarterback's position coach or even offensive coordinator has a great impact on a quarterback's improvement. But my question is, how much impact does a head coach actually have on this? You know, it's an interesting question, Evan, because Bill O'Brien has this reputation as a quarterback whisperer, except he's the guy that traded Fitzpatrick for nothing to the Jets, and then Fitzpatrick went to the Jets and had a much better year than he did the year before in Houston. And he's also such a quarterback whisperer that he benched Hoyer for Ryan Mallett last year and really hurt the Texans' chances for the playoffs. Somehow they still made it, but who knows what could have happened if he just left Hoyer in for those games. And now he's moved on from Hoyer. And we'll see what happens with Osweiler. So what has been your track record, Evan, with quarterback whisperer coaches? I guess particularly head coaches. Are you a believer?
You know, I always think it's something worth considering. But I think that the coaching narratives usually get way overblown. Like, Kyle Shanahan is known as being some sort of run game guru, except that his running games historically, like in terms of yards per carry and efficiency across the board, actually haven't been that great, you know, with a few exceptions. Like when he's had, the perfect storm, like with RG3, kind of catching the league by surprise for a year, et cetera. And his dad to fall back on. But I think the coaching narrative certainly get overblown, and I've really moved away from that part of my analysis. I mean, I always look at coaching history, but you know, usually it's, I mean, with Bill O'Brien, he coached Christian Hackenberg at Penn State, and Christian Hackenberg had the best or the only really good year of his career as a freshman under Bill O'Brien, but he also had Allen Robinson, you know. And last year, Brian Hoyer, you know, I think, you know, everybody remembers that 4-interception meltdown in the playoffs, but the regular season was probably the best of Brian Hoyer's career, except, you know, he had DeAndre Hopkins, you know, so you can tie it into a few different narratives, with quarterback whispers, with run game gurus. Ultimately, I think that some coaches are a little bit better than others, but I think that they're, for the most part, all in the sort of the same category, and they're trying to create offenses that amplify their strengths and minimize their weaknesses. And some coaches are better than others at doing that. But in terms of like run game gurus and quarterback whisperers, that kind of stuff really gets blown out of proportion. And football is really a small sample size sport. I mean, we only have 16 games per year. You know, it's not like baseball where you have 162 games worth of data, 700 plate appearances, et cetera. And so if a guy you know, if a coach coaches like three running backs that have success, all of a sudden he's, you know, deemed a run game guru, but it's really only three running backs, you know, or 3 years of rushing success. So I think that the coaching narratives certainly get out. They're always something to consider, but I think that you don't want to make that the crux of your evaluation of a fantasy player.
Right. And the last point I would make on that, as far as Bill O'Brien's concerned, so his track record is he was the offensive coordinator of the Patriots. So that doesn't even count in my mind, okay?
Right.
Oh, he was coaching Brady? So he's a quarterback whisperer with Brady? Yeah, good. Brady been in the league for like 10 years at that point. So that to me is irrelevant. And then in terms of Christian Hackenberg, you know, Evan, I live in Pennsylvania. He was the number one ranked high school quarterback in the country. Like, let's not act like – I know the last 2 years he stunk, but he has the physical ability to be a second-round pick. So maybe O'Brien wasn't that great. Maybe Hackenberg just regressed, or maybe the Penn State coaches the last 2 years just totally sucked. Or maybe, as I've said before, it's the worst offensive line Penn State's ever had by far. I mean, I'm 37 years old. I weigh 257 pounds, and I'd be better than any of those guys right now. I mean, it was embarrassing to watch them. So, anyway, I just wanted to piggyback off what you said as well.
Let me give one more example, too, because I think this is a really interesting discussion, and we could probably do a whole podcast on it. But, like Adam Gase has the reputation for being, like, an offensive wizard, when all he really did was, you know, in Denver – and I mean, I don't think he's a bad coach at all. I think he's a really good coach at, you know, et cetera. But in Denver, you know, when he was the quarterback's coach and Mike McCoy was the OC, they designed an offense basically that, you know, tried to limit the impact that Tim Tebow made as much as they possibly could, you know. So he gets credit for that. And then, and it's not like Tim Tebow lit it up. On the stat sheet at all. And then he had Peyton Manning. And then in Chicago, again, you know, they lost their pass catchers and they played ball control, run first offense to kind of, you know, mitigate the impact of their passing game because they knew that their passing game wasn't very good. So really it's just kind of using common sense, you know, and these guys sometimes get credit for being offensive masterminds when they're really just using common sense.
It's a very, very good point. Appreciate the question, Chris, and glad to have you aboard in the MFL 10 League, which is going to draft in a couple weeks, which means we don't even want more MFL 10 entrants. We need them. We need more MFL 10 participants. It's really easy. You get to go against me, against Evan, last year's winner, Johnny Rumford. And it's like giving you a free $10. And it's awesome because the draft doesn't take very long. And then you don't have to maintain it at all year. It's best ball. Love the MFL 10 format. So just send me to ross@rostucker.com. Send me any sponsor confirmation. Go get your BetDSI $10 using Tucker 10 or Draft 10, or I don't care. Go to jackerwin.com for the shoes or ZipRecruiter or any of the great sponsors we have over on the sponsor page at rostucker.com. We need you in this league so you can get smoked by me and maybe Evan. I'm stuffed. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now because it's awesome. I mean, everything about the experience is top-notch. But what's really cool that a lot of people don't know is they do used cars as well. I mean, there's over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So you can get the same awesome experience connecting with a local certified dealer or using the TrueCar website, the TrueCar app, checking out the TrueCar pricing curve, which I love, which shows you the high end, the low end, and where most people are buying similar vehicles, all for pre-owned cars in addition to new cars. TrueCar users save an average of just about $3,300 off the MSRP, which is awesome. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, make sure you visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.